what happened in Vancouver in 1994. Game 7, Stanley Cup Finals, 1994, their team loses, there's rioting in the city. It's almost identical to what happened in 2011. They caught this one guy on camera, and he said, "The only thing that's going to make me feel better right now is material things and violence."
We're seeing this pendulum swung now where it's defense of criminal behavior.
Chief Mark Garrett, here we are again. Another week's gone by. Are you a hockey fan, Chief?
You know what? I wouldn't call myself a hockey fan. I've been to a handful of games, and I guess I enjoyed a little bit, but not a fan.
Yeah, me neither. Never played hockey. My dad was a big hockey fan, but I never played hockey. I know football's your thing, man, especially living now in the SEC, buddy.
That's right.
So you're not is there a Pac-10 anymore, Mark, or is a Pac-10 gone?
I don't know what's it called. No, I mean, what's it called now? It's like merging with the Big Ten. I've forgotten now because it's happened so fast so many times. But listen, I'm still a USC Trojans fan. Grew up a Trojans fan. So wherever they're playing, I'll be cheering for USC. But yeah. The SEC is pretty exciting.
I agree with you. I've been a USC fan, I think, since, I don't know when I started following them, probably when Keyshawn Johnson played there. Back in the day. Wasn't Key a SC guy, Trojan?
Oh, yeah. He definitely was.
That's when I became a fan.
I bet to Charles White. That's how far back I go. But anyway.
Yeah. Troy Polamalu?
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Gotta love the hair, Mark.
Yeah, gotta love the hair. God bless him.
Today, Mark, we're going to talk about I think it's a great series that ESPN's done over the past several years, 30 for 30, where they pick kind of interesting topics and do like kind of mini documentaries on them. This one's about hour and 20 minutes, something like that. It's called "I Just Came for the Riots," and it details the social unrest, Mark, as you and I know that to be the proper term, social unrest associated with the Vancouver Canucks losing Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals in 2011. And this, you know, you might think this is a little kind of off topic for us. Maybe it is, but there's really two things when I watch this that caught my attention. And really three, let's say three things that caught my attention as really specific things to dive in on. And as we get through the story, I'm going to see what your thoughts are on them, because in your spot as chief in the California Highway Patrol for the LA area, I want to know how you would have handled a couple things that came up in this. First off, Mark, I was obviously living in LA when the Lakers went on their three-peat run. I don't know, what are we talking? We're probably talking, what, 2000, 99, 2000, 2001, 2002, yeah. Somewhere in there. What was your assignment back then with California Highway Patrol?
So in 1999, I was still a patrol officer. I was working in the Altadena station, kind of northeast part of, you know, LA County. And, so that's what I was. I was actually working for a living. I was a patrol officer back then. And yeah, I remember those times. I remember where I was in 2000 when they won, and watching the riots. I'll go ahead and use the word riots.
Yeah,
watch that happen. Yeah. So I didn't have any supervisory role at that point, which is a good thing to good place to be, actually.
Right. It is weird how a phenomena in this country, and I guess it's not just this country, it's worldwide. I mean, you see soccer hooliganism is crazy in Europe. Mm-hmm. Where
in South America.
In South America too, yeah.
Yeah.
Where it doesn't matter if it's a victory or a loss, there could very well be some kind of riot associated with a sports team. And is it the type of person who's a fan? Is it just getting you know, that many people in one place at one time when they leave the building with that all feeling the same way, charge of adrenaline or whatever it is? You know, we'll talk about exactly what may be behind it. We're not shrinks, but we'll talk about what may be behind it. Mark, this one, 2011, it was June. the Vancouver Canucks were playing the Boston Bruins. We got all the way to a game seven, and the Vancouver fans seemed pretty sure they were going to win the Stanley Cup. The game was in Vancouver. They seemed pretty sure they were going to win the Stanley Cup. They had outdoor viewing parties. Now, I don't recall in L.A. something like that ever being done, where they showed a sporting event outdoors in a common area like that. But they had outdoor viewing parties in Vancouver where they had these giant screen televisions. And the reports I saw, Mark, in this documentary, right, 100,000 people in the street watching the game. Okay, so just let me ask you this, just that part alone, your chief, California Highway Patrol, LA area, and as I know, and you were way more involved in this than I was, and believe it or not, even at DEA, I was involved in this. For instance, when the Super Bowl was here, months ahead of time, the planning meetings with all the law enforcement heads, where they discuss how things are going to be handled, who's responsible for what each agency's role is going to be. If someone had come to you, Mark, and said, hey, we're going to have an outdoor viewing party on the street in downtown LA. We're going to put big screens up. We're going to have 50,000 people, 100,000 people out on the streets. What would your response have been if that was game seven of a sports series?
I would have said, I'm going on vacation. That's what I would have been, out of the country. Well, yeah, that would have been my desire. But the reality is, and I want to be careful, because I don't want to play the Monday morning quarterback. I want to be very careful about that, because I was in law enforcement like you were for three decades. And people really enjoyed, if I had been there, if I had been, you know, the SAC, if I had been the chief, if I had been the commissioner, if I had been the sheriff, if I had blah, blah, whatever, whatever, whatever. Yeah, but you weren't. So go ahead and button it up. Mm-hmm. And when you want to go ahead and put your behind in that role, then you can talk. So, but even having been there, I do want to be careful, because nothing's perfect. Even when you plan everything out, still stuff can still go to crap. Now, having said that, when we are aware in law enforcement of the history of this stuff, and I'll give one example. I'm a Dallas Cowboys fan, and I'm a, you know, miserable Cowboys fan right now. But anyway, in 1992, actually in 1993, when they won their first of three out of four Super Bowls in a row, they had riots in Dallas. They, you know, they beat the pants off of the Buffalo Bills, 52-17. Wasn't a close game. And what do? Fans, people rioted in Dallas, Texas. And I remember one of these rioters, one of these people out there, got interviewed, got a microphone stuck in his face, and he said, it's our turn now. It's our turn now to go out and do X, Y, Z. Because the previous year, I forget who won the previous year or whatever, there had been riots in another city. In other words, people are clearly, not everybody, but some people are clearly looking for an excuse to go out and engage in bad behavior. So having said that, 2011 in Vancouver, there's plenty of history about what can happen. What's the potential? And now you have a situation where you have 100,000 people outdoors who clearly are expecting, like you said, a home victory, a home win for the Stanley Cup. What could go wrong? That's the question, not what do we know for sure is going to happen, because nobody does. Now, my understanding is they had, I think, at the outset, as part of their operations plan, they had about 400 officers, I think, assigned to this, right?
Right.
And I'm thinking 400 to 100, a little low. I can honestly say, Bill, I think in that situation, had I had the authority, when you talk about, in my case, in Los Angeles County, we're talking about LAPD, California Highway Patrol, LA County Sheriff's Department, and then a lot of these other smaller, large agencies, you know, Long Beach Police Department and Pasadena Police Department and Burbank Police Department, Glendale Police Department, there are a tremendous amount of resources, not only physical resources, but intelligence resources that you can gather from FBI, DEA, all these people, as far as intel, which is so important. And the California Highway Patrol is very, very good. The CHP has gotten very good at intel mining and getting a better idea of what might happen. The idea, I think, that under the same circumstances, had I had the authority as chief, that I would not have put together as best I could a coalition of law enforcement agencies. Now, again, talking about the Lakers or the Kings, things like that, that's in the city of Los Angeles. Operational authority goes 100% to LAPD in that particular case. So there's only so much that any particular, you know, law enforcement leader can do depending on whose jurisdiction it is. So we got to be clear about this. How things work in Canada, I'm not sure. You got, you know, Vancouver PD, you got the Mounted Police, things like that. But what you want to do is, and LAPD was very good about it. And this, when we had sports events happening that had implications like this championship, certainly subsequent to, you know, 20 plus years ago when those three-peat games happened or championships happened with the Lakers, LAPD would reach out to the Highway Patrol. And our primary function was, hey, we got to keep the freeway off ramps, on ramps closed to here in this area, you know, LA Live and things like this. We have to discourage people from coming into the area to, that would add to the problem. LAPD put out massive amounts of pre-assigned, you know, officers, things like this, trying to present a show of force to prevent this from happening. So, you know, that's a long answer to, I think that they could have and should have prepared better based on the clear evidence of something possibly going really wrong.
And that goes to, like I said, Mark, when I opened this thing, I said there was probably three points really that, you know, that I think are significant about this hour and 20 minute program. The first one, which they didn't get into until probably almost an hour into the show, but I thought when I heard it, I said, are you kidding me? Was what happened in Vancouver in 1994?
Right.
Game 7, Stanley Cup Finals, 1994, their team loses. There's rioting in the cities. In the city, it's almost identical to what happened in 2011. And they showed video of 1994. And Mark, absent the different uniforms, right, and different, you know, people dressed differently in 1994, you really probably couldn't have told the difference. So I understand what you're saying about Monday morning quarterbacking. But at the same time, was there not a lesson that should have been taken from 1994? Did they all of a sudden think, hey, it's 17 years later, we lost game 7 in 94 and we had these huge riots in the city, but this time is going to be different. We're going to invite 100,000 people into downtown Vancouver and we're not going to expect the same problems. And I thought it was interesting what you just said about cutting off freeway access the freeway, basically cutting off the exit ramps or kind of trying to isolate downtown a little bit or wherever the venue is to discourage people from coming in. They did exactly the opposite. Now, I understand that, hey, it's a point of pride, local pride, right? It's your team. You think the people were confident their team was going to win. Everybody wanted to be a part of it. There's only so many tickets. They're trying to do something to kind of create unity in the city and promote good feeling in the city. So they invite all these people downtown to watch this victorious game. But don't forget, 17 years earlier, they had the same thing happen. And there were these crazy riots. So the game starts almost immediately. Boston's up 1-0, 2-0. 3-0. And then the third period, when they pull their goalie, Vancouver pulls their goalie, a fourth goal, I think, is scored. They lose 4-0. There was a classic quote, which goes to something I think you just said, Mark, a little while ago, where you said, hey, there's people just looking. I don't know, you say something like there's people looking for an excuse to riot or people, whatever. They're coming down there to cause trouble, whatever the case, now the interesting thing was there was interviews conducted. There were people with cameras on the streets. There were news crews with cameras on the streets around the venue because this was a news event, right? This was game seven. And after the loss, they caught this one guy on camera. And I don't know if you remember this part, Mark, but he said, they talked to, you know, hey, how do you feel? You know, you guys lost. He said, the only thing that's going to make me feel better right now is material things and violence.
Yeah.
So right there, I mean, there's a quote on camera, the guy saying basically, hey, we lost. We're going to do some damage here. There's going to be violence and looting. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, that's what happened. But the second thing leading up to this game, which people have been critical of, and you know, and I've seen the response by the responsible parties, and they seem to completely say, oh, that's crazy. There's no way that has anything to do with it. How often the media reminded the citizenry, the people, the fans, how often they reminded them in the time leading up to Game 7 about the riot in 1994 after Game 7. The media was repeatedly showing clips. Remember, you know, the last Game 7 we had, there were riots in the city, and you know, almost like willing that outcome into existence. And what did you think about that, Mark? That the media took that tact, and then more specifically, what did you think of that guy that they interviewed? I don't remember his name, and it's really not relevant. But that media guy they interviewed, who really kind of washed his hands of it. When I'm watching it, I'm saying, and he's saying, oh, no, that couldn't have had anything to do with it.
Well, you know, it cuts both ways, Bill. And I thought about that. And my initial reaction was, you know, what are they trying to foment, this kind of behavior? But then I tried to sit back and analyze what else was the media to do. In other words, the 1994 story was huge, and it was very relevant. I think that it was newsworthy. I mean, did they pound it too much? Did they possibly encourage people to do this? I mean, people who weren't even alive at the time or don't remember 1994. It's possible, but it certainly was a newsworthy event. I don't think a year went by with like when the Kings won championships there, the hockey team in Los Angeles, that media references were not made to the riots when the Lakers won championships. So I don't think that it was anything. I don't think it was inappropriate at face value. Was it hyped too much? You know, whatever that might mean, what's that threshold? It's possible. I certainly see that part of it, but I still think that it was newsworthy to talk about what had happened 17 years previous. At the same time, this is why I say it cuts both ways. If one thinks that it might be encouraging bad behavior or giving people, you know, ideas of what they may be able to get away with, things like that, it sure as hell should be reminding law enforcement you better be on top of your game. That you better be on top of your game. That you should be doing everything within your ability to prepare for the inevitable, to prepare for the worst case scenario. Let's put it that way. I don't think, and by the way, it's not just law enforcement. The idea of bringing 100,000 people down, you know, in that situation with emotions running high, you know, to have them, you know, outdoors watching this, I just don't think that it's the best idea. And you're very correct about the understanding of people wanting to take part in a potentially, you know, wonderful event for the city and the fans, things like this, but the potential for what happened to happen was very, very high. So I see both sides of this with the media. It's not something that they could not report. It's not something they could not talk about what had happened almost 20 years earlier. Could they have gone too far with it? It's possible. But at the same time, the onus for me was on law enforcement and the city leaders to prepare for the possible outcome of what we saw.
Right. I think, you know, a couple other things that I thought were interesting about it. It's been, I think this incident has been referred to as like the first social media riots or something to that effect. And we saw in the documentary, I don't know where a lot of the film came from. I guess it was news crews or the documentarian out there at the time, not really anticipating that to happen, whatever. But as this violence kicked off, and it started with one person jumping on a car, and then three people jumping on a car, and then cars being flipped over, and then cars being lit on fire, and it just escalated and escalated. I don't know, Mark, at least for me, I mean, there almost seemed like there were some people at the time that were saying, like, hey, once you're in this mob and once this kicks off, you're almost like not responsible for your actions. Did you get that feeling at all? Like, not that specifically, you know, someone said, hey, I just got caught up in this, and, you know, but it was almost like there was a little bit of an understanding, like, hey, once stuff starts getting crazy like this, you know what? People aren't responsible for their own actions when this mob mentality takes over.
Yeah, which of course is absolutely bogus. Now, there was one lady in there who literally got kind of caught up in it. Now, even she, I mean, she's the one that took a selfie, or someone took a picture of her. I can't remember now. I think someone took a picture of her with a guy with the shirt.
Yeah. And the shirt said what, Mark?
And the shirt said, you know what? Was it? Is that what it said?
I'm just here for the riot.
I'm just here for the riot. Right. I can't remember if it was something Vulgar Runner or not. Yeah. But he had the shirt, I'm just here for the riot, which obviously we get our title from. But she did absolutely nothing wrong. She didn't engage in any illegal behavior whatsoever. But of course, her image was plastered all over social media, all over the world. And so she paid a personal kind of political price for this, and, you know, personal life, I think her employment life, things like this. But she didn't do anything wrong, but she was kind of the poster person for this whole thing, because she allowed herself to be put in a bad situation but didn't engage in any wrongdoing whatsoever. Now, going back to the, well, once you're caught up in it, blah blah blah, you're not responsible for your own actions, or, you know, blah blah, look, here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen, a mob cannot exist without individuals that make it up, period. Well said. Okay. So this whole thing, it's a mob mentality. Mm-hmm. Now, what that means to me is that you decide to allow yourself to be influenced by a particular group behavior. Group behavior is a real thing. But again, it only becomes group or mob. Well, you stick with the word group. It only becomes group if individuals make a decision to fall into line, period. Emotions are very powerful. I don't dispel. I do believe that emotions are very, very powerful. But it shows you this. It shows you how dangerous emotions are. Emotions are extremely dangerous because generally emotions are not logical. Mm-hmm. That's why when you put yourself in that position, and when I say, when you go down to an event, 100,000 people, and you're hoping your team's going to win, you expect your team's going to win, you have to understand, you've already, if I did it, a Dallas Cowboys fan, I go to a big outdoor event, blah, blah, I have to understand that some of my cognitive, objective, reasonable part is going to be diminished.
Right.
But once you realize that, then you can say, hey, listen, Mark, don't forget yourself. Don't forget what you are. Don't forget you're still responsible for your actions. That's what responsible people do. And, you know, it's like, well, I was drinking, so I got out of control. That's your decision to drink to a point where you are not in control of your faculties. I don't accept the mob mentality as far as responsibility being diminished one bit. It's and here's one of the reasons. I mean, I think I made it clear, but to add to that is that we all have to understand that once you do give in to mob mentality, is that your actions can be far amplified beyond what they were if you were acting as an individual, because mobs are frightening. They're frightening to law enforcement. They're certainly frightening to store owners. They're frightened to grandmothers walking down the street. In fact, there was more than one gentleman in there. There's one guy who wrote a public apology ahead of time, you know, and said, this was, you know, I'm responsible. It's my fault. I let myself get caught up in this. And that's what happens when you can step back after the fact and look at, like, my God, what did I allow myself to become in this moment just because my emotions were running high?
And Mark, what was interesting, and it goes to what you said a few moments ago, there were people who, so the physical violence, the first physical violence that I saw was Canuck fans versus Boston Bruins fans.
Yeah.
Pushing, shoving, fist fights.
Very but ugly.
Then, as that escalated, there were actually what I guess we would call good Samaritans. There were people who were saying, hey, they were actually yelling, this is our city. What are you doing? Yes. You know, don't do this. You're destroying everything. And they actually started trying to hold back the crowd, push back the crowd. And there was one situation where a guy was knocked, a good Samaritan who was doing that, was knocked down, and they were kicking him in the street, and then two other people intervened. I don't know, potentially saved his life, because he did not look good when they got him up, you know, bloody, face bloody, etc. And all he was trying to do was stop people from destroying property, you know, trying to do the right thing. He was almost killed, and two other people had to then save him. So there were good people out there who were able to remain in control despite the mob. And, you know, it's interesting because it goes to what you're saying. Like, their cognition was such that they didn't get influenced by the mob. They still knew the difference between right and wrong, and they were still able to do the right thing. And there were several of them, and they were almost looked at as heroes in this thing. In the media, in the days after it, they were pictures of them, videos of these people trying to protect property and saving people from getting hurt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and I remember that when you're talking about where that one gentleman is being, I mean, kicked and punched and, I mean, you know, on the ground. I mean, it's really disgusting to watch. And that, you know, goes back to what I was saying about allowing yourself to be influenced. And again, I think it is, you simply decide, I'm not going to do what I would normally do. I'm going to go along. It's a decision. I'm going to go along. I doubt seriously that any of those people that were in a group beating this one man would do that as individuals, namely because most of them are probably cowards who would never stand someone, you know, one-on-one. But it shows the power of real group mentality. And again, when I say that is you have to make a decision that you're going to go ahead and let yourself acquiesce to whatever the current is, whichever way the tide is rolling. And then when you couple this with, again, I said, that's why I say emotions, by the way, can be absolutely wonderful, but emotions can be very, very dangerous. And so you're emotional, you're already hyped up. You are assuming, like you said earlier on, Bill, that people were convinced that they were going to win the Stanley Cup. Mm-hmm. And so you go from this high to this low. They're both emotions. You go from being, you know, just absolutely on cloud nine, euphoric, to anger, to absolute anger. Those are both emotions. And then you couple that with how much alcohol is flowing.
Yeah.
So again, these are decisions. Okay, I'm going to go out here and I'm going to be completely on the edge of the emotional spectrum. I'm going to load myself up with alcohol. And by the way, there was one guy talking about, I think he said alcohol. He had multiple.
LSD.
You know, yeah, LSD, alcohol, right. Weed. Right. There was one, and cocaine.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, right? So this guy was like a layer cake of like, I'm going to be in trouble today. Okay.
Right.
So when I hear all the excuses about the mob mentality and things like that, it's like, most people have to make so many decisions to put themselves in that situation to begin with. I said, sorry. It's like the guy who kills somebody, you know, behind the wheel of a car because he's full of nine beers. No, you made the decision. I know it's a cliche, but it's really important to remember, if you put yourself in the circumstances, then, you know, you've made the decision. So, and this, I know a little bit off topic, but I think it's germane to the conversation. It's the same thing we see when we talk about, maybe not to be totally accurate, but these spontaneous riots we see when it comes to race relations, or the Rodney King riots, things like this, that most of these people that are involved in the behavior wouldn't do it as individuals. But, and even if you say, well, my anger is righteous, well, maybe it is, but like they were saying, Bill, you said it a minute ago, this is your city,
right?
This is your city. It's the same thing with like the Rodney King riots and other political, riots. You're only doing damage to where you live, where you work, you know, where you own a business. It shows the power, the very dangerous power of emotions, because often the only person you're hurting is yourself or the people you purport to support.
Yep. And then the only other thing to talk about, Mark, was the response, which I guess this is what now, 13 years later, today's time, it would be called I'm going to not say this the normal way to try to avoid problems. It would be called the cultural cancellation.
There we go.
Where the people of the city used social media and really set out to identify, because again, we talked about it. Everybody was out there with their camera. When you see pictures of the streets with this rioting going on, everyone is filming everything. So there's probably tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of images, videos. Someone started a website to just upload them so people could upload pictures. Everyone started uploading pictures, and then it became private sleuths or individuals taking it upon themselves saying, hey, let's identify these rioters and let's get them. Yeah. And then the craziness started with that, where they almost called it, one person called it the riot after the riot. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the internet riot after the riot, where just as much, and I'm not saying justified or not justified, Mark, I'm just saying that they set out and started destroying the people that had destroyed the city. So they put their pictures up. They said, help us identify these people. They notified employers. There was one guy who was going to be on the Canadian Olympic team as a swimmer. And I was he the guy that was about, they caught him with the rag coming out of the gas tank on the police car. And he was bent down. And he was bent down with a lighter. Right. Yeah. You know, he was it looked from the picture as if he was about to set a police car on fire. Mm-hmm. And they started a petition, online, get him thrown off the Olympic team or whatever. But this giant movement started. And basically it was the public. It was a movement of the public via social media to demand accountability. And I don't know. You know, for sure, I don't recall anything prior to this, prior to 2011, where there was such a big public outcry for accountability. And really, to be honest, in this country, I don't think I've seen anything like that since. But social media was used to identify these people. And do you remember how many people were charged, Mark? I don't. I have a number in my head, but I'm probably... So for some reason, I want to say 700, but I don't know if that's
I can't remember. And again, I watched the document a couple of days ago.
You know, someone fact checked that to me and put it in the comments if it was 700. But it was a lot of people. But again, the law enforcement part of it was really only one thing. The other part of it was just independent people like, hey, do you know this person? Upload their name. notify their employer, just really trying to go after these people and demand accountability. Questions for you, Mark. Have you seen anything like that since in this country? And what was your thought about the public using social media as an accountability tool to hold these people responsible?
Well, I'll answer your second question first. My thought about that is that the condemnation via the public square is something that has been around since recorded history. And the only thing that's changed, of course, are the tools that that are available. Of course, social media now is obviously so prolific. You can't walk down any street without being on someone's camera. And so the potential there to solve crimes, to hold people accountable is tremendous. The potential there to implicate totally innocent people is just as prevalent. And mm-hmm. in other words, that lady we talked about earlier, standing next to the guy with the shirt saying, "Well, here for the riots," is example number one. So it's a tool, but it's a tool that can be misused. Have I seen anything like it since? No, not to my recollection. And I wish that we had seen something like that since then. And specifically the 2020 riots. Here's the thing here in the United States, Bill, is that there is certainly far, far, far more content available with the riots that occurred across this country than there were at the 2011 Stanley Cup Finals mm-hmm. in Canada. But it seems that there was a disproportionate lack of use by the media and by law enforcement specifically when it comes to holding people accountable in those riots. And that's what I thought about when it got on the topic that we're discussing now in that mm-hmm. documentary. I thought, man, you juxtapose this to what happened across the United States and the countless thousands of people who engaged in heinous crimes, including murder. Mm-hmm. And I think there probably some are still unsolved. But certainly the vandalism, the felonious assaults, the grand theft, I think in some cases kidnapping, in other words, dragging people against their will from one place to another, that are still not only unsolved, but that are unprosecuted, that are unindicted. And they're caught on now. Some were, but I think it's the federal building in Portland. I mean, that was under siege for weeks.
Yeah.
For weeks. Mm-hmm. And there are still people who are on camera that have never been indicted for that. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking the question is probably a question for another show. Why?
Right.
Why? When you have something like this with a sports riot, a riot's riot, but the genesis of this was sports stuff. Why are those people in Canada held accountable? And by the way, they should be held accountable.
Right.
They should be subject to pressure from the public square. But why was it so underutilized, the same tools during the 2020 riots here in America? I have my opinions, as you might guess, but it's a question I think each of us should ask.
And I think, so Mark, I would say that, you know, to some extent, I think people justify the lack of using it as a tool, a lack of pursuit. In other words, I think there's people out there that would say, well, it depends on why people are rioting. Mark, it depends on why people are right. This riot was justified. So we don't want to do this public square shaming for people that were out there with a valid concern. And my thing is, that's not, you know, I don't think there's, rioting is rioting. You know, damage to property is damage to property. Physical violence, violent crimes are just that. So the reasons behind it, I don't think should be looked at as either using public shaming or not using public shaming. But the one thing though, Mark, I would say is I think there has been a lot of attempts at public shaming using social media in this country ever since 2011. But it's been based on what? Mostly political ideology.
Almost 100%. Yes,
right. It's been almost mostly 100%. Based on political ideology. And where is that public shaming when there's crimes of violence, I think, is the question that you and I are asking. And then one more thing, going back to the pictures, you know, the danger which we saw in Vancouver was photoshopping, right? They took the picture of that woman and the man with the I'm just here for the riot shirt. Yeah. And originally it was, I don't know if it was just in front of a building, right? It was just in front of a building, if I'm not mistaken, with broken windows.
Almost like in an intersection in front of the building, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
Next thing you know, they were right in front of a car that was on fire. They were on the roof of a car that was on fire. You know, it became like a meme or whatever, where they were just put all over the place, as happened with a lot of the people that were involved. The other interesting thing that I want to point out, and you and I spoke about this with Anthony, I think, several months ago, is Canada. And you have to point me in the right direction here, Mark, because I don't remember the specifics. But Canada was telling people not to make public videos of potential crimes because, Anthony, am I right on that? There was something where there was RCMP or somebody was complaining that when people took video, like Ring camera videos of a burglar going in their house, they were making it public. They said that was inappropriate and that was going to be a crime, I think, if you did that. And I don't know if that's somehow, you know, if it's basically like almost lessons learned from incidents like this, where the public use of these videos got crazy and they almost started doing their own law enforcement stuff or what it is. But it's interesting that in Canada that mindset did come out. And do you remember what the reason was for it? Was that, were they saying it was, right? Yeah. So Anthony is saying that it was not necessarily a crime, but they were telling people that they were not allowed to, or they didn't want people posting Ring videos or you know, public. They didn't want a public shaming going on of people stealing packages off porches or burglaries or that type of thing. And I don't know, maybe it's somehow related to incidents like this one in 2011 where the public, you know, Canada, someone in Canada, let's put it that way, doesn't want the public demanding accountability if law enforcement's not going to demand it. Does that make sense what I'm saying there, what I'm trying to say there, Mark? They don't want the public. They may tell law enforcement, hey, don't look into this. And then they don't want the public doing law enforcement's job, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's one, I think, one valid assessment of it, Bill. And of course, but there's a trend with this. I know, again, we're, you know, deviating a little bit here, but it is related. Public shaming for actual commission of a crime, I'm fine with that. In other words, I think everybody should be fine with that, right?
Right.
But what we're seeing is, and again, and I don't mean lifetime, you know, persecution. I don't mean not being able to work. I'm not looking for that. But acknowledging that someone committed a crime against society is totally appropriate. But what we're seeing, I think, whether it's Canada, certainly here in the United States, certainly in the state that you live in, California, we're seeing the pendulum has swung now where it's defense of criminal behavior. I'm sorry, I don't know how else to say it. It's that the you know, scarlet letter that used to be there, you know, put on criminals' heads for engaging in that type of behavior has been wiped away. When you look at all the types of laws that have happened in California, reducing this, you know, behavior to a felony that used to be a felony to a misdemeanor, things like this is part of a trend. Exactly what the motivation for the Canadian officials to discourage people from posting Ring video of crimes happening on their property, I'm not sure exactly what the motivation is. My guess is there's simply a watering down now of holding people accountable, whether legally or in the public square.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, somehow, Mark, we start with Game 7, the Bruins against Canucks, and we end with a broader discussion on public shaming. But, I mean, that's what makes it interesting.
It does.
There's definitely a connection. And that was one of the first times in humanity where there was this digital public shaming and digital demand for accountability. Mark, very unlikely that there will be rioting anytime soon in Dallas for the obvious reasons. but thanks for having that conversation with me.
Thanks today. A lot for the dig. I appreciate that. You know, I'm still in therapy for the first round playoff loss to the Packers last year, Bill.
As you should be.
And yeah. And then of course you have to take advantage of a broken soul and just crush it more. So I appreciate that.
Hey, follow our advice, folks. If you have tickets, go to the game.
Yeah.
Don't watch it on a big screen outside the stadium or venue. You know, likely from history, we know that doesn't end well. Thank you, everyone, for joining us, and we'll see you next time.